evening, we continue our series of studies on 1 Kings. We've come to 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 1 to verse 24. We come to this message entitled, Three Challenges. Now, we know already that the nation of Israel broke into two after the reign of King Solomon. King Solomon sinned against God towards the end of his life by marrying many preachers, many wives, pagan wives, and therefore what happened was that the Lord punished him by taking away a big part of his kingdom. So what happened was that immediately after Solomon's death, the nation was split into two. 10 tribes in the north broke away under the leadership of a man called Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, whereas the 2,000 tribes remained with Solomon's son, Rehoboam. Now, in the southern nation of Judah, there were more godly kings through the years following. But the northern nation, which continued to be called Israel, sometimes it's called Ephraim after the biggest tribe there. The northern nation of Israel sinned against God from the beginning. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, did not want the people in the nation to go down south to Jerusalem to worship Jehovah, the true God, there. So what he did was to make two golden calves to represent Jehovah. One he placed in the northern city of Dan, and one he placed in the southern city of Bethel. And he told his people, this is to save you the trouble of having to travel all the way down south to Jerusalem to worship God. Here are your gods. So he made the people worship the two golden calves, which was against God's law. God did not allow anyone to make any images of himself. And also he encouraged the worship of pagan gods. And so soon the whole nation was worshipping Jehovah, the true God, together with all the pagan gods of the surrounding nations. And as the years went by, one king after another ruled over the northern nation. And each king seemed to be worse than the previous one. They seemed to be competing with one another. The new king would want to be worse than the previous king. Each wanted to be worse. And by the time we arrive at the reign of King Ahab, we discover that he was one of the most wicked king ever. He not only continued in the mixture of worship, the worship of Jehovah and the worship of all pagan gods. He not only continued that which we call syncretism, mixing together the worship of the true God with other gods. So he practiced syncretism, but he married the wicked woman, a well-known wicked woman of the Sidonians. He married her to be his wife. And this Jezebel, her name, she is going to cause havoc, as we shall see. And what happened is that Ahab went a step further. He made the worship of Baal official in the nation. So you will see this as we go along, that Baal worship became so prominent, a prominent feature. Now, what happened was that spiritually, therefore, the northern nation was very dark. Most of the godly people have already moved down south to join the southern nation of Judah. And very few true prophets were left in the northern nation. And those who were true prophets also, they were so fearful, they were silenced. Their mouth was shut because of fear for their life. And this we shall see how bad it was at that time. Then what happened was God sent Elijah, a homegrown prophet, to confront the king. Elijah was from the small town east of the river Jordan, from the town of Tishbe, and he went to confront the king Ahab and told Ahab in the words of chapter 17 verse 1. He told Ahab, as the Lord God of Israel lives before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years except at my word. So what happened was that no rain came for the rest of the time. And Elijah was told by God, you go to this particular town, this particular village called at a certain place by the brook called Kerith, And there I will feed you with the water there, although there is drought throughout the whole nation. So the whole nation had no rain and there was no water to drink, but the water continued to flow in that river called Kerith from the river Jordan. There came a tributary which fed Elijah. And the ravens were moved by God to bring meat and bread to him morning and evening, morning and evening, until the brook Kerith ran dry, so there was no more water. Now we know that God could easily have provided Elijah water from another source, because God is the Almighty God. In years past, in the time of Moses, he had caused water to flow out of the rocks to feed thousands upon thousands of people. Surely the same God could cause the rocks to burst forth with fresh water again. Or he could have provided Elijah with fresh water in some other ways. But God did not provide him with water miraculously. Instead, he sent Elijah to a small village near Sidon, to Zarephath. And there, he ministered to a widow and her son. And the widow and her son continued to have bread to eat, and they shared the bread with Elijah. Until about 3 years passed by. Then when 3 years was over, Elijah was sent to face with Ahab again. And so the nation, therefore, was in a very severe situation. The famine was bad. Spiritually, the situation was bad. And Jezebel was persecuting the believers. So you can imagine, put all this together, the nation was really in a very bad state. And so now that 3 years have passed, with no rain falling, the people were suffering so tremendously. Elijah was sent again to confront Ahab. And you are going to discover that he not only confronted Ahab, actually in the process of confronting Ahab, he confronted other people as well. And all in, we can say that there are three categories of people, or three groups of people he confronted with regard to their faith in Jehovah, the true God. So we are going to look at the three sections. First, the challenge to this man called Obadiah, verse 1 to verse 16. Then we are going to see the challenge to Ahab, verse 17 to verse 19. And finally, we are going to see the challenge to the people of Israel, verse 20 to verse 24. So we come to the first section, the challenge to Obadiah, verse 1 to verse 16. Now from verse 2 of chapter 18, we know that the famine in the land was very severe. We are told in verse 2, so Elijah went to present himself to Ahab, and there was a severe famine in Samaria. We already know that the famine was severe, but it is mentioned again to underline the fact that 3 years later, the situation was very bad. Now, in your mind, you must be thinking, I thought in the New Testament, in James chapter 5, verse 17, we are told that Elijah pronounced that there would be no rain, and it did not rain for 3.5 years. How come here it mentions 3 years, the third year? Hey, wait a moment. It doesn't say that the famine finished on the third year. No. It says by the time it was the third year, Ahab was sent to confront this Ahab. But then there is the confrontation with the prophets of Baal, and there are many things that happen afterwards, until later Elijah asks his servant to go and pray, and then the cloud began to show, and finally rain fell. So by the time the rain fell, it will be another half a year. So James is right. It was for 3.5 years that there was a famine. So what we are saying that is that from verse 1 here, it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, go present yourself to Ahab and I will send rain on the earth. This is correct. Ahab was confronted by Elijah in the third year, and then many things happened subsequently. Okay? Now, in that time when the famine was so severe, what was Ahab doing? This king, you know? He was more concerned about his animals than about the people of the land. Look at verse 5. He told the chief servant of his house, Obadiah, to go and help him look for grass for his animals. We are told in verse 5, and Ahab had said to Obadiah, go into the land to all the springs of water, to all the brooks Perhaps we may find grass to keep the horses and mules alive so that we will not have to kill any livestock. As king, he should be more concerned for the population, for the people. But he wasn't too concerned. And if we know what sort of person he was, we would expect that he had along the way made the people come and feed him, feed his household, feed his animals. So others have to suffer and all others are taxed and they suffer severely, whereas the king and his household live well until the people could not contribute anything anymore. So the king had to go out to look for grass for his animals. So his concern was more his animals rather than the people of the land. So it is not that he loved his horses and the other animals. It's not that as a person who loves his dog or his cat or some other pet. But here, you know, it's not his pet, his horses and mules, you see. So this man, you can imagine what sort of man he is. He's just more concerned about his animals. So you see here that these people had to suffer under this king. And throughout, Ahab had spread the propaganda that the cause was Elijah. And the reason? In chapter 17, verse 1, we read already that Elijah came to confront Ahab and pronounced that there would be no rain until he said it, then rain would fall. So it was so convenient now to turn the attention upon Elijah and told everyone. He told everyone, you see, Elijah is the problem. He's the cause. Yeah. If Elijah had not been the troubler of Israel, there would be rain, there would be no famine, there would be no suffering. So what happened is that Ahab sent men to go and look for Elijah everywhere. And where was Elijah all the while? First of all, he was in that place by the brook Kerith, and he was being fed by the ravens, remember? So you see, sometimes, you see, the bad man just hides in one corner, you know, and he doesn't move. And then all the police is looking everywhere, high and low, but he's just standing there quietly, you see. So Elijah was a good man, but the bad man was looking for him. Ahab was looking for him. So Elijah was told by God to just stay by the river Kerith. And here Ahab sent his men everywhere, look for him. And he went even to the surrounding nations to look for him. And when people said that, you know, we haven't seen Elijah, Ahab warned them, you see, and threatened them, and made them swear, you know, you sure you have not seen Ahab? Sure you are not helping him? Sure you are not keeping him? So they have to swear to say that they were not keeping or harboring Elijah. And this we see in verse 10. Obadiah told Elijah this, as the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to hunt for you when they said he is not here. He took an oath from the kingdom or nation that they could not find you. So you see, Ahab was doing that. He really hated Elijah so much. And he turned people's attention upon Elijah, putting the blame upon him. So he was looking for Elijah all this while. Then we know that Elijah later went to the neighboring country of Sidon, and there he was living with a widow and his son. And now Elijah finally came to confront Ahab. So meanwhile, Jezebel, that wicked woman married to Ahab, he ordered for all the prophets of the true God, Jehovah, to be killed. And we do not know what is in his mind. He probably hated all those who refuse to worship Baal and Asherah. She supported Baal and Asherah, the pagan gods, god and goddess. Yeah? And she actually kept 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah. They were under her direct sponsorship. They actually ate at her table. In other words, she gave them their pay. Okay? So Jezebel had been supporting this many prophets, 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah. So she probably hated those who worship Jehovah, the true God, because those who worship Jehovah would not want to worship false gods. So she probably hated them. But there is another likely reason why he ordered for all the prophets of Jehovah to be killed. You remember in the days of the Lord Jesus Christ, when the wise men went to worship Jesus, the one who was called King of the Jews. Then Herod the Great asked the wise man to return to him, to tell him where he was, and he would go and worship him as well. But the wise man was warned by the angels, and they went back by a different route. So Herod discovered that he was tricked by the wise man. So in his anger, he ordered all infants, all male infants throughout the nation from 2 years and under, to be killed. Now the reason was that he was hoping that as the infants were killed, one of them would be Jesus Christ, the King of the Jews. So you see here that in all probability, in the thinking of Jezebel, when she ordered all the prophets of Jehovah to be killed, she was hoping that along the way Elijah would be killed. Okay? Now whatever it was a very cruel move. See? All those who refused to worship Baal or Asherah or any pagan gods, all those who were faithful to the true God Jehovah, they faced death. Then comes into the picture this man called Obadiah. He was a high officer in the palace of Ahab. He was in fact the chief steward, the secretary of state, as it were. He was a chief servant, the overseer in Ahab's house, as you can see in verse 3. And his name actually meant servant of the Lord. And he appeared to have had a good upbringing so that he feared the Lord. And we are told at the end of verse 3, we are told, now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. So he was truly godly man, in the sense that he was genuinely converted, unlike the so many in the nation who claimed to worship Jehovah but actually were not converted. Now when did he begin to fear the Lord? He himself told Elijah in the words of verse 12. Look at the end of verse 12. Obadiah was protesting to Elijah and he said, but I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. So from the time when he was a youth, which can be anything from perhaps 11, 12 years old onwards, we do not know. But in any case, by the time he understood, he already began to definitely follow the Lord and worship him. Okay, so this was this man Obadiah. So Obadiah decided that he had to do something. He was serving a wicked king, and he decided to do something. So he risked his life by sheltering 100 prophets of the Lord, of Jehovah. And 100 prophets, how do you keep 100 prophets without being known by people? So he decided to send them to the caves. And there were 2 caves, and he put 50 in each cave. So that was the best he could do. And then he had to arrange secretly for them to be fed. See, all this we learn from verse 4. So Obadiah tried to be useful, and he must have been very fearful, risking his life like that. If he were discovered, he would die, because he was working for Ahab, and Ahab could easily stretch out his hand, catch hold of him by the neck and say, I've got you, you see, and just chop off his head. Obadiah could easily have died, you see. So Obadiah was a godly man who showed courage in that sense, but it was a strange type of courage. It was courage that was kept secret. He did not want people to know his faith or his true allegiance. And it is difficult to place ourselves in Obadiah's position, you see. According to the teaching of the Bible, we should separate ourselves from evil. So Ahab was a known evil man who was propagating the worship of Baal so outrightly, right? And his wife Jezebel had ordered for the true prophets to be killed, and she was supporting the false prophets. Okay? Now, if we were in Obadiah's position, shouldn't we have seen that it was wrong to work for a wicked king and a wicked queen like that? But you may argue the doctrine of separation is not clearly taught in the Old Testament. It is clearly taught in the New Testament. I hope you are convinced. But maybe it is not clearly taught in the Old Testament. But I want to prove you wrong. See, there are so many passages that we can refer to, but we will refer only to the ones relevant to us tonight. Now, during that time, the events are recorded in the book of Chronicles as well. So if you turn from 1 Kings chapter 18, you turn further to the book of Chronicles and turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 15. 2 Chronicles chapter 15. And this chapter is about a good king called Asa, who ruled in the southern nation of Judah, just slightly before the time of Ahab in the northern nation. Okay? And in chapter 15, verse 9, we read that Asa gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those who dwelt with them from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon, for they came over to him in great numbers from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with him. Now, you must understand that Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon are large tribes in the north, in the northern nation of Israel, which means that godly people in the northern nation of Israel had moved down south to join the southern nation of Judah because they knew that God was with the southern nation. God was not with the northern nation. So the godly people have already separated. Then look at chapter 16 of 2 Chronicles. Now, this man, Asa, although he was a good king, and many people, godly people from the north came down to join him, and God was blessing him, he made a mistake. He go and joined himself with the northern king, the Baasha, the king of Israel in the north, and they decided to work together. You see? Now that was wrong. And when he returned, the prophet Hanani came to confront him, as you can see in chapter 16, verse 7. Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 16 verse 7. At that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, "Because you have relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped from your hand." He was trying to go against the northern nation of Israel, against the king there. So he went to join himself with Syria, which was a pagan country, to together try and go against the northern nation of Israel. So by joining himself with Syria, he was actually not practicing separation. He was joining with a pagan king. So God's prophet rebuked him for that. Then you turn further on to in 2 Chronicles to chapter 19. Now after the time of Asa, there was a good king called Jehoshaphat in the south, in the southern nation of Judah. And Jehoshaphat did a wrong thing. This time he joined with the king in the north, in Israel. And when he did that, God confronted him by the prophet again, chapter 19, verse 2. And Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, came out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you." See? So because he joined forces with the northern king, he was rebuked. So he should have learned, you see? But after a number of years, towards the end of his life, he forgot this lesson. He joined again with the northern king to do business together. And God again showed his displeasure against him. And if you look at chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles chapter 20, look at verse 36. This is about the same king, Jehoshaphat. See, in verse 36 it says, "And he allied himself with him," with Ahaziah, the king of Israel, the wicked king of Israel. "And they made the ships, they make ships to go to Tarshish, and they made the ships in Ezion-Geba. But Eleazar, the son of Dodavah of Marisha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, 'Because you have allied yourself with Ahaziah, the Lord has destroyed your works.' Then the ships were wrecked so that they were not able to go to Tarshish." So I hope you are convinced that even in the Old Testament, the doctrine of separation is clearly taught. God's people must separate from evil and don't join with them, don't join forces with them. Otherwise, you will be regarded as sharing in their sin. You may say that you disagree with their doctrine or with their practice, but why be so close to them? Why work together with them? Why support them? Why not you separate from them or rebuke them. You see? So you see that coming back to this Obadiah, we know he did wrong. Other people have gone down south to support the good kingdom, the good king down there. But he chose to stay back. Maybe because his life was too comfortable. He was the chief steward, the chief servant, the overseer in the house of Ahab. He was too comfortable alive, you see. And that reminds us of secret disciples like Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea in the New Testament. Although we are happy that they came to faith in their difficult situation, but the way their lives are recorded show to us that God is not in favor of people hiding their faith. If you have come to true faith in Jesus Christ, why hide it? Why pretend? See? Be bold enough to declare it. And sometimes that can mean danger to your life, in which case you have to pray and seek God's wisdom what to do. See? But in the case of Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, they have to wait until the Lord Jesus Christ died, and then they make bold and came out in the open to go and ask for the Lord's body. You can read about this in John's Gospel chapter 19 and in verse 39. And you see, it's so sad. They have to wait until their Lord, whom they love, died, and then they come and show themselves in the open to get his body, to do a last good turn to the Lord who had died. And of course we know the Lord rose again from the dead, and all who have true faith in him will be saved. But the point of the matter is this: we must come to appreciate the Lord as soon as we can. The Lord himself in his lifetime on earth said that a prophet is not without honor, except in his own home and his own country. So a prophet has honor elsewhere, but in his own home and in his own country, he's not appreciated. Now, it's so sad that there should be such a thing as a secret disciple. Now, we try not to be secret disciples. Try to be bold. Don't be like Obadiah. And by being a secret disciple like that, by wanting to obey the Lord, wanting to follow him, and yet too afraid and too fearful and not wanting to let go of all and not prepared to suffer for the faith. You see, Obadiah put himself under difficult situation. So what happened is that God wanted to confront him about this. So God came into the picture. Okay. So what happened is that the Lord sent this Elijah to confront Obadiah and said to Obadiah, "You go and tell Ahab that I'm coming to see him." Now, why should Elijah come to confront Obadiah like that? There must be a good reason. Because Elijah was already going to see Ahab, the wicked king. He could easily have gone straight and see the wicked king. You see, there was no need to involve Obadiah. So we conclude that the confrontation with Obadiah must have been ordered by God, commanded by God. It must have been deliberate. It was in order to awaken Obadiah to the realization that for too long, see, he had been a secret disciple. Now he had to come out into the open. And you can imagine Obadiah was protesting away. He was so fearful. Right? So he gave various arguments. He said, "You know, I'm a lover of the true God. You see, you know, from young I feared the Lord." You see, now you have feared the Lord, but why are you being involved so closely with an evil king? You see, then he protested. "But you see, when Jezebel, the wicked king, ordered for the true prophets of God to be killed, I protected 100 of them, put 50 in that cave, and 50 in that cave, and I've been feeding them. Haven't you heard?" You see, so whatever his protest was, it was of no avail. Elijah told him in verse 14, "Go tell your master, Elijah is here." It wouldn't be very nice to be said to you, "Go tell your master." Now, who is your true master? In one sense, it is true. Ahab was his earthly master. But from another point of view, it must have pricked his conscience. You know? Obadiah claimed to be worshipping God, the true God. So to be told, "Go and tell your master, ayo," you see. That means you are being reminded, who is your true master? God or this wicked king? Okay? So, you see now, Elijah was so definite, so adamant. Verse 15, he said, "As the Lord of hosts lives," so he's using God's name now, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand. I will surely present myself to him today. So you see, whether you go and tell Ahab or not, I'm going to show myself to him. So you see, Obadiah was put in a strait, in a difficult situation. If Ahab if Ahab was confronted by Elijah later, and Elijah go and reveal the fact that he had met with Obadiah, Obadiah would be finished also. So Obadiah knew that it was the right thing to do, to do as Elijah had commanded him. So we read there, Obadiah reluctantly went to meet Ahab and told him. And you see, earlier he said that God might just take Elijah away, then leave him with a big problem, because Ahab would be not well treated by Ahab. Ahab would not be very happy if Obadiah had apparently told a lie that Elijah was coming to see him, but Elijah disappeared. But Elijah really appeared before Ahab. Okay? So all in all, what we are seeing here is what appeared to be a godly man, Obadiah, was being confronting his faith. He had been keeping his faith secret. And all in all, we see the teaching of the Bible. God does not favor secret discipleship. God does not approve of people who claim to be secret Christians. You want to be a Christian? Be so openly and be so in a definite way. Then in the second section, we see the challenge to Ahab, verse 17 to verse 19. As we have noted already, King Ahab had been hunting for Elijah everywhere, you see. And he thought that he could just seek out Elijah. Elijah would be cringing, hiding under the bed somewhere, and his soldiers would drag him out and then bring him to the king. He thought that Elijah would be brought to him and would have to do as Ahab told him to do. But no, God had other plans. God wanted Ahab to come on Elijah's terms, which would be God's terms. In other words, God is the one who is in control. Therefore, his servant Elijah was going to be the one who dictated to Ahab how they were going to meet, not the other way around. So you see now that when Elijah came and confront Ahab, Ahab was, as it were, taken aback, and he did not straight away order his soldiers, arrest that man, you see, imprison him, or chop off his head. He didn't. You see, he was just too taken aback. And this prophet was so bold, he came to the king, to the wicked king, and confronted him, you see. And Ahab could only say, in the words of verse 17, is that you, O traveler of Israel? You see, and Elijah denied that he was a traveler of Israel. I have not traveled Israel, but you and your father's house have, in that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals. So you see, by not following the commandments of the Lord was bad enough, but by following the Baals, that is worse. So you are compounding your sin. You have done very badly in the sight of God. You have sinned very badly. That's why trouble comes to Israel. So you are the cause. All your forefathers, your father, the father's father, all those wicked kings leading all the way to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, they have caused Israel all this trouble. Okay? So Elijah put things right there to make it clear that it was not he himself, but Ahab and the previous kings who had brought trouble upon Israel. See? And note what was happening here. Now, Elijah said that Ahab and his fathers have been worshipping the Baals, plural. Okay? Look at the words of verse 18. Now, Baal was the storm god of the Phoenicians, which was now introduced into Israel. But there are many local manifestations of those Baals. Each village, each town, each city would have their image of Baal. So there are many Baals, so-called, the local manifestation, local statues and images of Baal. So they have been propagating this and worshipping this Baal, who was actually the storm god, who was supposed to control the rain. And very obviously, Baal had been impotent. Baal had been without power to bring rain throughout those 3 years. And now Ahab was being confronted by Elijah concerning this matter. You say I'm a troubler of Israel. You are the one who has brought trouble upon Israel because of you and the sin of the nation, that God had stopped rain from coming. Yeah? And obviously, your God, Baal, had not been able to bring rain, even though you say that your God is the God of the storm, the God that controls the rain. Okay? But you see, Ahab's heart was so hardened. Ahab's heart wouldn't want to believe that. He still put the blame on Elijah. And he was like Pharaoh in the days of Moses. You remember how one plague after another came upon the nation, and Pharaoh's heart was still hardened and refused to believe that he was sinning against God and he had to submit to God. And Ahab at this point appeared to be like Pharaoh, like that. His heart was hardened. He refused to believe that the problem was caused by himself, and he refused to believe that his God Baal has no power over the rains. Okay? So now God really had to shake this man, Ahab. So Elijah, the servant of God, now challenged Ahab to gather all Israel on Mount Carmel. And Mount Carmel in those days was one of the mountains on the range that ran alongside the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, ran along the coast. Mount Carmel was a beautiful holiday spot. Okay? It's almost like in Malaysia we say we go and meet in Cameron Highlands. We go and gather there. So you gather the whole nation of Israel, and also gather all the 400 prophets, 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asherah that your wife has been keeping. You know, bring them there. We will meet there. Okay? And Asherah was actually the goddess of fertility, who was supposed to be the mother of Baal. So you see the connection. Huh? And remember, all this were definitely supported by Jezebel. In verse 19 we read, "Now therefore send and gather all Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." In other words, everyone knows that Jezebel feeds these people. Jezebel supports these people, pays them. He is the one who gives them their pay. Okay? Now meet me there. Now, although at this point the purpose of gathering together has not been declared, it is obviously going to be a showdown. Okay? And so Ahab, of course, took the challenge. Okay, we meet there. But you note that subtly there is a shift now. Ahab is not setting the terms. Elijah is the one who is setting the terms. Okay, you come and meet me on Mount Carmel on such and such a date with all these people. Okay, so Ahab definitely needed to be awakened in a ruder way, otherwise he wouldn't awaken. And he had to be awakened and to be convinced in a special way, otherwise he would not be convinced that his God Baal has no power, because it is a false god. Okay? So we have covered two sections: the challenge to Obadiah, the secret believer; the challenge to Ahab, the wicked king. Now we come to the last section, the challenge to the people, verse 20 to verse 24. What happened is that the people of Israel gathered together. And of course, we don't expect every single individual to gather together. That is not what is meant. Right? Normally when we say, everyone is going to the new supermarket, you see, or this new shopping mall, we don't mean literally every single individual. What we are saying is so many people went. Okay? So here we read that all Israel was gathered together on Mount Carmel. That means many people were there. See? And most likely they went there as spectators. They expected to see a good show, you know, to see Elijah against how many prophets? 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah. So altogether, how many? 850 prophets against one. Few, you see, Elijah was going to challenge this many people. They thought it was going to be an exciting show. They expected only to be spectators, but instead, when they arrived and everybody was silent, Elijah challenged them concerning their faith instead. So in verse 21, Elijah came to all the people and said, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. See? Now the people have been faltering, and the word faltering means limping. See? So limping, you can imagine a person who is walking with a limp. One leg is short, one leg is long. See? So he shifts from one, the weight to from one side to the other, shifts from one side to the other, you see. So one moment you are that side, the other moment you are that side, you see. So which leg do you want to stand on? You see, that is basically the picture being given, okay? You see, so one moment you are saying Jehovah is the true God, so you are trusting in him. The next moment you say Baal is the true God, you are trusting in him. So you are shifting from one side to the other. So you are limping along. You are a person with a mind that is not made up. You're so undecisive who to follow. See? So in the end, what are you ended up with? You ended up with worshipping both Jehovah and Baal at the same time. And that is not pleasing to God at all. And you are actually falling into the hand of Ahab. That is what your king wants you to do. To have a mixture of gods to worship instead of worshipping the true God alone. Okay? And when Ahab, when Elijah pointed this out to the people, you see, that you are limping between two opinions, their conscience must have been pricked. Okay? And then you see, the challenge was now put to the people. Look, Elijah says, I'm alone. I'm left alone as the prophet of the Lord. Verse 22. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. And he's not mentioning the 400 prophets of Asherah. It's good enough to show that he's alone. He's alone against so many. And again, we can imagine the people must have been picked. Ayo, you know. See, we left this prophet alone to have to confront this many false prophets. All the while we claim to believe in Jehovah. And then they must have been thinking also that, you know, this is going to be a very unevenly matched situation. What have we been doing all this while? Shouldn't we quickly go on the side of Elijah and stand with him? And yet they feared. See? And yet they are of double mind. Perhaps, you see, Baal is a true God as well. Maybe he's a true God. You see? So in this difficult situation, they were being confronted like that. And Elijah then put it in the hearing of everyone, you see. Let the people provide us two bulls, okay? And let the prophets of Baal make the first choice, so that there is no doubt that they have the advantage throughout. They have the advantage of numbers, now they have the advantage of choosing the bull first. Choose which one you want. If you choose this one, I will take the other. If you choose the other one, I'll take this one. Okay? Elijah is giving them the choice first, the privilege of the first choice. Then each of us will slaughter the bull, chop it up in pieces, and lay the pieces on top of the logs, the wood. Okay? Then we will pray. You pray to your God, I pray to my God. Whichever God sends down fire to consume the offering, that is the true God. Okay. And of course the people understood, it was clear, right? There's no two ways about it. They could not say that it was ambiguous, not clear, maybe this, maybe that. When everything was carried out exactly, they knew very clearly what was involved. That the people far outnumbered Elijah, and the people made the first choice of the bull. And if fire did not fall on their bull, it meant that their God was not the true God. If Elijah's God sent fire to consume his offering, then Elijah's God was the true God. It will be so obvious to them later on. Okay? They would have no words of maybe this, maybe that. No. It will be so clear cut. So you see there in verse 24, we read then, So all the people answered and said, it is well spoken. That means they understood exactly what was being said. Okay? Now, of course, in our mind, we would be thinking, Why you people who claim to worship Jehovah and yet is of a double mind, you are worshipping Baal at the same time? Now you have to wait until this point, until you have to bring God to the test. Have you been brought so low as to test God like that before you would believe Him? And indeed, these people have been brought so low. They are so low already, and yet they don't realize. You see, what a pitiful sight they are. You see? Okay? So, the outcome will have to wait till our next study. So, we have to wait till the next installment. But in summary, we want to take note that there is the challenge to Obadiah, who was not practicing separation from evil. She was a true believer, but not practicing separation. Then there was the challenge to Ahab, the wicked king. And there was the challenge to the people who were hovering between worshipping Jehovah and Baal. Okay? Now, under each section, we want to conclude with one definite lesson. See? From the challenge given to Obadiah, we learn that there is such a thing as the sin of silence and inaction. Okay? Sometimes you like to wash your hands clean, you do not want to be involved. And not wanting to be involved is a curse, especially when you are in a position to do something for your God, and you don't do it. Okay? And it reminds us of Queen Esther and how she was confronted by her cousin Mordecai. And if you can find the book of Esther, do so. Otherwise, you just listen. It is before Job, before the book of Psalms. There's Job, before Job, there's Esther. So you see, look at Esther in chapter 5 of Esther in verse, chapter 4 of Esther, verse 13, chapter 4 actually, not chapter 5, chapter 4, verse 14. Mordecai, the cousin of Esther, who was a guardian to Esther, he raised up Esther, who became queen at that time. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" From very early, when I learned of the book of Esther, you see, these words remain in my mind. "Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Whether you are of high position or low position, whoever you are, as long as you are a true believer in Jesus Christ, remember that there is something that you can do for your God. You see? And if you don't do it, even though you are in a position to do it, God's work will continue. God will raise up somebody else to do it. You see? But the point is that you lose out on the opportunity, the privilege, the honor of being used by God in His service. And you will be regarded as having failed your God. That's why the late preacher Martin Lloyd-Jones, he said there is such a thing as the sin of silence. You see? Most of the time it is better not to say too much, because if you say too much you get yourself into trouble. But there are times when you must say something for your God. When you don't say it, you're committing the sin of silence. And if you don't do anything when you can do it, you are committing the sin of inaction. Then with the case of Ahab, we must understand that those who stand for God's truth are no threat to society, but those who rebel against God, they are a threat to society. Often it is that those in power want to put the blame of the problem of the country upon believers. See, they often like to do that, but the teaching of the Bible is so clear, and those who are honest, they can see very clearly. Believers never cause problem. It is the non-believers who are the problem makers. And that is why Proverbs 14 verse 34 says, "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." Then finally, the challenge to the people in Elijah's time reminds us that no one can serve two masters. You really cannot serve two masters. And the Lord Jesus Christ, In Matthew chapter 6 verse 24 says this, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Okay? So your ultimate loyalty has to be to God and to Him alone. You cannot have a split loyalty. Of course, there are hierarchies of loyalties, just like that, like our love. Our love for God, we are capable of loving others and love of different types, different degrees. But our ultimate love is to our God. So our ultimate loyalty is to our God. You really cannot have two ultimates. Then it is no more an ultimate. Our ultimate loyalty is to our God alone. So then these are the challenges that are put to us, that we cannot be secret disciples. We are challenged to stand for our God in our time. Then we are no threat to society. Instead, it is those who rebel against God. They are a problem to the nation. And we cannot serve two masters. We must serve our God, our Lord alone. So may God help us to be the people that we ought to be. And I'm sure you have found the story not only enlightening, but also very interesting.